Hello, everyone. This is JVL. Welcome to the show with Tim Miller and Will Salatan sitting in for Sarah Longo.
Oh, I was going to say, what? Sarah's had a rough couple weeks. I was like, I know she's doing two jobs over here, but all of a sudden I flipped on the screen.
Yeah, you know,
she
looks totally different with glasses on, right? With the glasses, she almost looks like Will Salatan.
Okay, interesting. Welcome, Will. Welcome to the next level.
Happy to fill in. This show has always had two people with a wife and one person with a husband, and we still do.
That's a great point.
Yeah. Hey, look at that. Look at that. So we were going to talk about Rona Romney McDaniel, who is now officially out and has been dropped by CAA.
Are you mispronouncing her name on purpose? Is this like a Don Lemon thing?
No, I wouldn't do that. No. And she, the Rona, like coronavirus. Isn't that how you pronounce it? No,
I don't believe so. I think it's like Ron, like Ron DeSantis.
Well,
drag.
Who could say? But we're not going to talk about that because we don't want you to have nice things. We're going to talk instead about the news that over at the New Jack RNC, they've got themselves some questions they're asking people who are applying for jobs over there. One of which is, was the election stolen? Bradley, do you say the election was stolen? Say it.
Chad. Trent.
We're into Stasi territory. We're in full Lives of Others land with what the Republican Party is now. Tim? I've interviewed there.
At the RNC. I've been in an RNC.
You probably conducted interviews at the RNC.
I've conducted many, many.
What were your litmus tests for people?
You know, competence, ability to write a press release, ability to communicate with others. Wanting to work hard, wanting to work after hours. Those are some of my litmus tests. You know, it wasn't a 40-hour-a-week job. Not going to cry if I yelled at them. I was a tough boss. I've totally chilled. I've totally mellowed. I was mean.
You were a yeller?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. What the fuck?
Boy, that surprises me.
I know.
Before you got into edibles, right?
I kind of like, you know, my edible journey is ups and downs, but, that was during a down phase for sure. I gotta say, JVL, but the interview I did that was conducted with me is probably the most relevant comp that I can offer of all out there, because I had worked on John Huntsman's primary campaign in 2012. Mm. It was a failed effort. We finished in last place, but we were feisty. It was a feisty last.
It was a gentleman's seventh.
It was not a gentleman's seventh. It was a very aggressive dick seventh place. Like we took out Herman Cain. We took out Mitch Daniels. We are not very good at promoting our candidate, but we are quite good at just taking out other candidates. I was like randomly shanking Rick Perry for no reason. We were good at the Oppo research on the Huntsman campaign. And as a result of that, the Romney High Command had some mixed feelings about me, personally. Some in the Romney High Command were like, never give that person a job. The attacks on Willard were too personal and too aggressive, and I do not want to see that person in a meeting or on a conference call. There were other people in the Romney High Command that were like, man, if some of my colleagues hate this person that much, we can maybe make some use out of him. And so that faction was like, okay, he probably won't be welcome in Boston, but maybe we can put him at the RNC where he could work to try to create agita in the Obama campaign. And so we had an interview. It was the Romney campaign manager, Sean Spicer, and Ryan Priebus, and myself. This is a great trip down memory lane, isn't it? So loyalty litmus test is maybe overstating it, but they were interested in making sure that like I did not have personal grievances against Mitt Romney, that I was not going to, you know, try to undermine him from the inside. There was not some Mormon on Mormon. I was not like a Mormon Manchurian operative inside. And none of those were true. I actually liked Mitt Romney. I just was a good sparrer. And I just enjoyed sparring. And so like there is there is a level at which this is appropriate, right? It is crazy for me to think that, like, oh, to hire you at the RNC, you'd have to like Donald Trump. But I think that's almost kind of a fair thing to ask at this point. If Donald Trump is going to be the nominee of the party, you would not want somebody to work for the RNC that, like, actively hates Donald Trump and or actively believes that he's going to institute an autocracy or that he's a racist bigot or all of the others, or that he's a moron reality TV show host, right? So, like, I would not be a good candidate, for example.
Wait a minute. What if the candidate thinks that he's going to do all those things but is in favor of them?
Okay, that's cool. If they're looking for an idiocracy, that would be okay.
If they think that he's going to do autocracy but they are down for it, that's cool. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I think that would be, again, I find that despicable and corruptible and terrible, but like it's defensible, right? This idea that you would not want somebody to work at the RNC who doesn't at least minimally support the person that the RNC is going to be supporting for president. Okay, so that's one thing. But then now to go down the rabbit hole into who, not only do you have to support Donald Trump and want him to be the president, but you must believe the preposterous lies that he is telling about our democracy, that his own family doesn't believe, that his own attorney general didn't believe, that many of the members of his cabinet didn't believe, that the people that were put in, the people that he hired in order to prove his lies were true, became unable to, they were unable to authenticate Donald Trump's fever dreams and wishes about the election thievery. So to demand that every single person that works in that building, the regional communications director, the data director, they all must ascribe to the lies. Now that is not a loyalty test. That is a cult. That is a cult. That we've now moved from saying, hey, you must support the nominee, to hey, you must completely submit yourself to all the false beliefs of the nominee, and that you must praise him and you must adore him as your lord.
Well, see, I'm going to go slightly the other way on this, Tim.
Okay.
Because we'll get to you, Will. I promise. You'll be allowed to talk.
Maybe not. Maybe not, actually. We kind of brought you into as like an audience, you know, or you'd laugh.
I've seen what Sarah has to put up with. Go ahead.
Yeah, so this is actually, we're proving to people, we're not sexist. We just like to talk and interrupt, okay? I've got to interview people now every day, and I'm sick of it, all right? I want people to ask me what I think. Sorry, JVL.
Isn't the RNC merely asking people, when they say, do you believe that Donald Trump won, what they mean isn't, do you actually really in your heart of hearts believe it? They just mean, are you willing to say that Donald Trump one in a public situation which calls for you to say that, which is different than like the Scientology level auditing where they keep you awake for 7 days straight and ply you with coffee and cigarettes all in an attempt to get you to admit that you're gay so then they can blackmail you or something, which is not a thing that Scientology does because they're famously litigious. I'm just saying I saw that in a movie once. It's a very deeply unfair characterization of a perfectly normal religion. And so that would be really bad. The sort of, you know, are you now or were you ever a communist kind of, you know, are you now or were you ever an ever-Trumper? That might be bad. But the simple, hey, around here, we all, if publicly asked, have to say that the big guy won. So are you willing to do that? Isn't that kind of what this question is, Will? I mean, don't get me wrong. It's despicable. But
you're making Tim's point, which is that's what you have to say in order to get this job, in order to be.
Right. Sure.
Right. Yeah. the fact that we have to cross this line. Look, I feel like I've been kind of crazy about, like, the first time I said that this was an authoritarian party, I was like, that seems a little strong, you know?
Am I sure I believe my own comments here?
Yeah, like authoritarian, it sounds like, you know, come on, we're not Russia, we're not China, we're not North Korea. Then, like, people started throwing around the F word, fascism. I'm like, that's a little, you know, I don't want to sound unreasonable, right? But you go through the list of what they're doing, and it's just check, 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 right? It's sort of like, we don't have a platform anymore. The only test is, do you believe in this guy, right? Where all the fundraising is now going to go through his operation, and like the Republican National Committee gets sloppy seconds on that. We're going to pay off his legal bills. So it's essentially the party has become, you know, a legal defense fund. We're going to literally install the guy's daughter-in-law as co-chair of the party. Like that's, I feel like asking you guys, Tim, I feel like asking you, like, these are things, nobody's ever done this before, right? You don't make a family member like a chair or co-chair of the party, right?
Oh, well, people have done this in, like, you know, Uganda.
Tag Romney was not made co-chair of the RNC.
Belarus tag. Occasionally, I would have to take a phone call from a Romney or a Bush family member, you know, that's like, hey, you know, cousin so-and-so over here is a little bit concerned about this or that, right? You know, so, okay, there are certain things you have to do to sort of keep everybody happy. But no, installing somebody in, that feels very un-American. Ann Applebaum had this to say about it. In Twilight of Democracy, I described how autocratic one-party states use conspiracy theories to test party members' loyalty to the regime. The Republican Party is now on that track. That's right. Like, right, this is, and it's directly out of a playbook from, you know, what you would expect from Mussolini, right, or from some, like, third rate, you know, autocrat in some Eastern European country.
Because once you get into that world, the only people you can trust are family, right? This is how gangster operations work.
So I was expecting, so Josh Dawsey wrote this piece and he contacts the RNC and the Trump people for a response. And I'm expecting a denial.
Responding to the inquiry has already had to demonstrate that they have to prove that they believe this, so they can't deny it. It's like Peter in the garden. This is a test. This was the RNC email to the spokesperson was the first test. I bet that person was nervous to even send it up the chain and say, do I deny it? Do I not? You worry you get in trouble then.
So there are these moments where I expect we're having a sort of a test of how far have we descended into this sort of, you know, North Korea style government or party at least. And I, you know, Ronna McDaniel goes on Meet the Press and starts to renounce stuff that she said as RNC chair. And I'm like, okay, cool. At least that means that there's still shame. There's still embarrassment. There's still people trying to track back to reality. And then I see this, and like, there's no denial of this. They give some statement back that, like, yeah, we asked people about their experience. It would have been easy to deny it. They didn't. So, like, they're like, yeah, we're doing this. It just seems insane.
It could have been worse. The RNC could have responded to Josh Dawsey by saying, we don't ask people, but everybody who has applied has freely proclaimed their belief in the greatness of Chairman Mao's program.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, this is what we are at struggle sessions.
So from a trajectory, you know. I think this hit the cutting room floor of my book because it was like going to be a person that was going to be a character that ended up for various reasons not being able to provide enough information to like merit a full chapter. But they were at the RNC in the first turnover, right, from 2016 to 2017, right? They're there during the primary, right? They were a former colleague of mine that worked at the RNC, was there during the primary, figuring, oh, I'll be the RNC, I don't want to give away their job, but I'll be a prominent person at the RNC when Marco Rubio or Jeb Bush or Scott Walker or whatever is the nominee, and that'll be a great job and good for my career. And then Donald Trump wins the primary, and then they're there, and it's like, what do I do? Do I quit or do I stay? This person made the poor choice to stay after I encouraged them to quit, and then Trump wins the presidency. And then all of a sudden, it's early 2017. And I was saying to him, I was like, what was it like during that time? And he said, well, you know, in the very early days, it had to be the biggest crowd in history. You know, like something would happen. Trump would say something crazy and we would have internal conversations at the RNC. Like, what do we say if we're asked about this? Do we correct the president? Do we say, what Trump really meant was thing? Do we ignore, you know? And at various times, he said, over those first couple months, we would have these internal calls where, you know, we would kind of bat that stuff around. And this person always was on the side of, well, I think, you know, maybe we should clarify, or maybe we should say that the chairman doesn't exactly agree with that or whatever. And, you know, it was just suggestions. It was internally. It wasn't like they were publicly going on TV saying Trump was wrong. These were private conversations. And this person told me that they received a call from Jared Kushner like a few months in that was like, hey, are you on the team? I wonder if are you actually on the team? Like, are you on board with what we're doing here? I've heard some things you're not on board. And they're like, no, I'm on board. I just want to make sure we're doing what's best for the RNC and for the building. I've worked here for a long time. And so that, I mean, it was all there. Like, it's all been there for 8 years. Like, this is just the final flourishing and manifestation of that. And like now, they don't have to have people like that person in the building anymore, right? Because they don't have any holdovers from 2015 left. Maybe like two, maybe like there are two Dilberts down in the, like, you know, there's one guy that's been there doing the direct mail since 1972. He might still be doing the direct mail down there, but mostly all of the people like this person have been flushed out. They've all taken other jobs or left or whatever. And so now they need to make sure that they're not replenishing the building with any future troublemakers. It's pretty dark.
I do want to make a point here, and I think we talked about this at some point recently, Tim. Trump is unique among presidents in my lifetime in that doing this to the party was his primary goal as president. He had no grand legislative ideas. He didn't have like a thing he wanted to do. What he wanted was to take complete and total ownership of the Republican Party itself as an organization. And nobody else has ever done that. This is, you know,
Andy wanted people to call him sir.
And with tears in their eyes. You know, and what it has always been is the president is, or the, you know, or the guy who's the presidential nominee is basically a caretaker of the institution, with the understanding that they are there temporarily and then they move off the stage. And, you know, they have, it's like head coaching in college basketball. There are family trees, right? You know, you have a guy who's a Rick Majewski guy and a guy who's a Bob Clemens guy or something. But you know, those ties very quickly dissipate and new structures arise. And this shit, man, this is, again, it is like the Gambino crime family. It's not a caretaker of the Republican Party. He owns it.
Is this about ego or is it about power? I mean, what I mean is the Chris Christie critique of Donald Trump is, you know, the libs are afraid that he wants to take over the country and do all this. But actually, it's just about he can't stand the idea that he actually lost the election. He needs people to affirm that he's the greatest. And he doesn't, you know, that this statement that they're asking people to acknowledge is just a statement that doesn't have any real meaning. Like if you're applying for a job at the RNC, the boss just wants to feel good. It's like the how many people were at the inaugural, that kind of thing, yeah. Right? So we're gonna lie, but you tell yourself the lie doesn't really matter.
Does Hitler really want the Sudetenland? Or is the Sudetenland really just about his personal pride and his, you know, like this thing he has in his mind about what Germany really should be?
I guess I'm just trying to get at the rationalization. Somebody who's asked this question, who's applying for this job, I mean, following Tim's trajectory, sort of you work your way down the hole of like successively more and more crazy things you have to affirm. But I wonder if saying that Trump won the election, when as a matter of fact, Joe Biden is the president, I mean, Ronna McDaniel says he is legitimately elected president, but saying that Trump actually won now serves this sort of ego purpose for Trump.
No, and maybe it's tell about yourself, keeping the enemies out. It's about keeping perceived enemies and traitors and stabs. Right? It's all like, this is all just. They went through this in Germany, right? We only lost World War I because of the stab in the back, right? That's what this is. And they want to keep all the bad Republicans out. And this is one way to try to, you know, one of their screens for it.
As usual, I'll take the middle ground. I think it's about the hole in Donald Trump's stomach and the fact that Fred didn't love him as much as he wanted, but it's also about a purge. It's both. It can be both. It doesn't have to be one or the other. This episode, this very uplifting episode about our descent into autocratic rule, is sponsored by Factor. Factor, which has greatly improved the healthiness quotient of my family's meals with delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never frozen meal is chef crafted, dietitian approved, and ready to go in just 2 minutes. You'll have over 35 options to choose from every week, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Also, there are more than 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up and feeling good all day long. Get started today and get after your goals. Factor meals only take 2 minutes to prep, so you can fuel up fast with our restaurant quality meals that are ready to heat and eat whenever you are. You can also discover a wide variety of easy options for the entire day, like breakfast, midday bites, and more. There's no prep and no mess. These dishes are ready to heat and eat And they're also flexible for your schedule. Get as much or as little as you need by choosing your meals every week. Plus, you can pause or reschedule your deliveries anytime. Factor is the perfect solution if you're looking for fast premium options, no cooking required, especially if you live in New Orleans and you're often eating fried and fatty meals and you're looking for something that is less expensive than takeout and that is dietitian approved to be nutritious and delicious, then you should head to factormeals.com/thenextlevel50 and use the code thenextlevel50 to get 50% off. That's a lot. That's code thenextlevel50 at factormeals.com/thenextlevel50. Go do it. Get 50% off. Get some healthy meals in between your po' boys. I promise you'll enjoy.
All right. So we had a horrifying national tragedy happen earlier this week. The Francis Scott Key Bridge.
Ronna Romney losing
in Baltimore.
CAA contract.
No. So we had a container ship hitting one of the main pillars on the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore and bringing the bridge down. I believe as of right now, at least six people are dead. I want to talk a little bit about the response of the police and just the Port Authority people around this, which was unbelievably good. They had 4 minutes from the Mayday call to the time the bridge was in the water, and they stopped all traffic. And they weren't able to get the construction guys off the bridge, but it was just tremendous, tremendous work on the part of the first responders. And a bunch of Republicans decided this was time to keep going culture war. Here is a gubernatorial candidate in Utah, Phil Lyman, who's currently a state representative. He tweets out, "This is what happens when you have governors who prioritize diversity over the well-being and security of citizens." That's great. Representative Jeff Van Drew also blamed it on DEI. Nancy Mace blamed the bridge collapse on the Biden infrastructure bill. I'm Ron Burgundy. Marjorie Taylor Greene, just asking questions. Maybe it was an inside job. I don't. It's a big country.
The libs of TikTok lady managed to insult Pete Buttigieg and said that I guess that our bottom Secretary of Transportation will be there. So I had to make fun of his sexual choices.
Oh, because he's gay.
Yeah, and then and then she included along with that. She included along with that tweet. She included along with that a picture of Pete and Chasten sitting on a swing together, smiling happily. This is this is a really
well, those two sickos deserve it,
person.
Don't they?
Yeah, that's a pretty sad person, I guess. That's an insult.
Yeah, that's a bridge too far.
They have a happy partnership. There you go, Will.
So this is one of those things where it used to be something like this happens and everybody like drops the politics for 5 seconds and then it comes back. You know, it always comes back, 3 days later when somebody says, well, Governor Kebab isn't doing such a great job with his response, right, on the Deepwater Horizon or something like this. But we don't even have that refractory period of pause anymore. We just go right to culture war stuff. And it's so insane. But what I want to know is, Will, why don't these people pay any price for it? Because I don't think that Representative Phil Lyman is going to have to walk this back if he wants to do well in the Utah governor's primary. Like, it's just, you could just say stuff. Nobody cares.
And the big picture I would say about the Republican Party, it's not a governing party. It's not a party based on getting things done. I mean, we just had this demonstration with the border bill, right? With the Democrats are like, okay, no amnesty, we'll just give you border security stuff. And the Republicans are like, no, we want the issue. We don't want to solve the problem. And so they're already like, here's a classic, a bridge collapses. It's a classic governing issue. Something needs to be done. And their whole reflex is, how can we use this to get people angry? And their base is happy with that. Their base wants this to be about, I don't know, this, look, DEI today is pretty much code for black and brown. It's code for like, or maybe anti-gay in the case of like libs of TikTok, right? That we're going to find some way to take the most simple practical infrastructure issue, a bridge that went down, and we're going to make it into an issue about gay people or black or brown people or whatever their DEI thing is. We were just talking about that litmus test in the Republican Party. That was an absurdity test. Like, what's the craziest thing that we can get you to a firm, right, in order to get a job at the RNC. I feel like this bridge collapse is another absurdity test. What is the most culture-free issue that we can throw at you, and we challenge you to come up with a cultural spin on it? And they do it. That's what they are.
Yeah, Tim, this is the, they got to prove that they're the craziest son of the bitch in the room, right?
Yeah. No, I did a tweet that it was like, if you have two Republicans in a primary and one Republican is like, I think the UN is run by aliens with masks on, and I think that the Francis Scott Key Bridge was actually built by mole people, and that the mayor of Baltimore was only elected because he's black, and I also think that, you know, there are fucking, who knows, Sudanese swimming across the ocean and then coming up through Mexico across the border because they want to terrorize our country. And then you have the other candidate that's like, I think that we should cut back on red tape and cut taxes. Like, the Republican voters are like, give me number one. Like, I love number one. Like, give me more of what you're selling, candidate one. And I just don't like I don't know how you fix that, but like that is where, so that's why these people go that way, because they are rewarded, right? Like, the stupider and crazier and most racist and offensive excuse they give for these sorts of news items, the more that they will be, it's not as if they're not punished, they're celebrated for it. You know, and that's true in politician level, and it's certainly true at the media level. You know, the Francis Scott Key Bridge situation, we've seen this. Like, it was built in 1977. So I explain to me the DEI initiative that went into building that bridge. Like, who do it, you know? None of this stuff even makes sense. Like, the people that said that Baltimore elected their mayor as a DEI, like, Baltimore is a black city. Like, what do you mean? Like, Baltimore was tokenized? It doesn't even make sense that, like, this claim that's going around that the Baltimore mayor was DEI. And you know, I interviewed for the Daily Pod today one of the reporters from the Baltimore Banner, which is an independent outlet that was started because the Baltimore Sun was bought by hedge fund guys and then sold to some conservative cranks who think that Putin is the good guy in the Russia-Ukraine war.
Yeah.
And so now the Baltimore Banner is like is a pretty straight news. Like, I kept trying to get him to like take digs at the Baltimore Sun, and he wouldn't do it. You know, he's like, we're doing straight news. Like, we're actually doing local news. Where we care about this stuff. So I asked him about the mayor situation, and he's like, I watched the video. Like, I assume maybe our mayor said something stupid when I kept seeing like the thing going around like on social media that we have a DEI mayor, like with the picture of him. And then I watched the video of the press conference, and it was like a totally normal press conference. Like, they're just making fun of him because he's black. Like, it's like nothing. It's like, they're just making a racist joke about the Baltimore mayor. Like, there's nothing, there's no substance to it. So, I just and then the attacks on Pete, you know, the anti-gay attacks on Pete, the attacks with the infra, like, Nancy Mace does the high class version of this, right? Okay, Nancy Mace right. is like, here's the sophisticated version. Like, I'm gonna bridge down. That means Biden blame bad because Biden did infrastructure. And when it's like, well, no, obviously, if anything, the opposite is true. Even though in this case, I don't. It's not like the Francis Scott Key Bridge needed to be fixed. It was like that. Have you seen like the pictures of the ship? This ship is huge. It's like unbelievable. it's like you could have built a Superman bridge. And if a ship of this size, like when you look at it from the side angle rather than the upfront angle, you're like, oh my God.
Can I just give you a sense of scale here,
yeah,
Tim?
Please.
So this is a thing that I've been, you know, batting about with some physics nerds.
I love you have physics nerds in your life.
To give people a sense who, you know, were like, well, why did the bridge just collapse when the ship hit it? So, again, this is just back of the envelope math, right? We don't know exactly how heavy the ship was because of the load it was carrying. But back of the envelope, if we are dealing with a tanker that's around 175,000 tons and it's moving at 9 miles an hour, and then its deceleration goes from 9 miles an hour to, which is, you know, like a little bit faster than walking pace, goes over 100 feet, right? And so it goes, it starts slowing down, then at 100 feet, it's zero. The energy equivalent, because remember your high school physics guys, F equals MA, force equals mass times acceleration. The energy released
in that. I got a D in high school physics, just in case you're wondering.
Is like 10 5,000-pound bunker buster bombs going off. Okay, so it's like the amount of energy in something that massive being released as it comes to a stop is is mind-boggling. And there is no bridge alive which can survive this. You know, this is, you know, this is why there are things which they have built to try to defeat, you know, ships, because bridge collapses are a thing that happen every once in a while with ships. But the problem is you got to keep designing and then installing, you know, bigger countermeasures as the container ships get bigger. And container ships have gotten bigger and bigger over the course of the last
And you also have to remember that in 1977, they hired woke engineers. You
know, right.
They didn't hire legitimate engineers. They just hired them based on their skin and gender identity.
Dance majors.
Yeah, yep. that made the bridge, and that was another problem. Yeah, had they hired a couple good, strong white guys, the bridge might have survived.
Hopefully, some good, strong white guys without no fancy college degrees. If they just gotten Cletus von Ivermectin to sort of sit down there and draw up what their Dairdon bridge should look like, that would have been good.
I feel like Tim has touched on like a theme that we could actually spin into some pieces and stuff. The woke anachronism, this has got to be a regular thing, right? Where people are like talking about something that happened before the era of DEI and they're blaming
it on DEI. This is true about the pilots, right, too. It's like, DEI has created these woke pilots that are now crashing the planes. And it's like, I mean, the average pilot has been, what, you know, probably 20, 30 years. And then, you know, like the whole thing is insane. Like, it takes a long time to become certified, to become a pilot. And like, when did the woke training start?
Right. This is one of my, I don't want to say favorite topics, but a topic I keep thinking about bigotry. Like, okay, bigotry is bad for lots of reasons. It's evil, it's hurtful, and all that stuff. But it's also incredibly lazy. Like, what bigots do is, whatever happens, a bridge collapses, they're like, okay, what are my priors? I don't like black people, so it's the mayor's fault or somehow, right? Don't like gay people, so I'm going to blame this on the Secretary of Transportation. I don't know what else they're going to come up with. But, like, that's just their go-to. And they don't need to read, they don't need to do the physics, you know, they got a D in physics too, right? Except instead of like actually trying to figure out what happened here, it's just like gay, black, whatever.
Or Muslim. We got Lara Logan. She was on 60 Minutes. She's a credible main news journalist. Just want to make sure you saw that she was on Steve Bannon's podcast saying that this is a terrorist attack that they're covering up. So that was on the Bannon show this week. Great. And this is what the listeners are getting.
Our second sponsor today is Roan Apparel. Do you want to look good without having to think about it? You need to get a wardrobe from Roan. Their men's clothing are versatile, durable, refined, easy to style, and help you exude confidence effortlessly in a wide range of social and professional events. Men's closets were due for a radical reinvention, and Roan stepped up to the challenge. Roan's commuter collection is the most comfortable, breathable, and truly versatile set of products known to man. They have products for every occasion. I'm talking about the world's most comfortable pants, dress shirts, quarter zips, polos, blazers. They look great as individual pieces, and they work seamlessly together. Roan's signature four-way stretch fabric is breathable, flexible, and works everywhere from your commute to work to the 19th hole, which is a place I've never been to and never will because I don't golf. Treated with Gold Fusion anti-odor technology for more wears between washes, you'll be fresh and clean all day long. I would just say I am not all that interested in style, and I am happy to wash my clothes like after every 4 hours. I don't need to get a whole day out of them. For me, the basic element of wardrobe is t-shirt, and the Roan t-shirt, the fabric they use, is incredibly comfortable. It really is outstanding levels of comfort, and that's what I care about, and I think they're great.
You know what? Tyler, though, my husband, is fashionable. And he's already taken my Roan shirt, and he started to wear it. So if you're non-fashionable like JVL, or if you're fashionable like Tyler, it works. And for me, I've been doing the Bannon. I wear a Roan t-shirt, and then I put a Roan collared shirt on, and then I put another Roan collared shirt on top of that.
That's great. They're going to love that. Anyway, head to roan.com/thenextlevel and use promo code thenextlevel to save 20% off your entire order. That's 20% off your entire order when you head to Roan, roane.com/thenextlevel and use code thenextlevel. It's time to find your corner office comfort. All right, so we got some news. Out in the DEI world of the Daily Wire, they have parted ways with Candace Owens, who is out. And gonna have to just pull herself up by her bootstraps and start over again. And I hope that gal can make it happen. Tim, you, as the foremost Owensologist at the Bulwark?
I'm devastated. And here's why. Because I need to, at least until Candace gets back up on her feet, and I need a new podcast. My weekly fix of Candace, like yesterday I was at the end of my podcast kind of queue, and I looked down and I was like, there's no Candace here. I can't do another hour of Bannon. I can only do 1 hour of Bannon a week. Any more than that is too much. But some people have suggested to me Patrick Bet David. So maybe look out for a Patrick Bet David feature coming through. I'm ahead of the game on where you guys are at, on where the MAGA podcast world is. He was a big deal at TPUSA this year. Weird guy. But so yeah, Candace is out. It's sad for me. Probably happy for her, because I think she's going to really be able to let her freak flag fly. I mean, she only did blood libel against Jews like, I don't know, like 6-7 dozen times before Ben finally canned her, you know, and you could tell there were some areas.
I thought they were in favor of free speech over there.
Yeah, you could tell there were some areas where she wanted to go, but she felt a little bit, you know, she felt like there were some limits, like the man had the boot on her neck, because, you know, if you looked at her likes, she was really kind of going a little bit deeper into Hitler apologia in her likes than she was in her actual comments. And so I think Candace is really ready to let loose.
She's going to Twitter, right? This is Elon's next big get, I assume.
I'm sure. And she'll go somewhere. She'll do great. Because she, unlike these other nerds, you know, she does like conservative conspiratorial political talk, and then kind of just mixes it in with like little pro tips for moms who have twins and like the best, you know, the best strollers to get. And then she'll like mix that in with like assessing the, you know, having a take on the Beyonce record and how.
Where was she on the Kate Middleton stuff? Did she do a conspiracy on that too?
Yeah. She had deep thoughts on that. Oh, and then there was the French Macron's wife, the Russian propaganda that Macron's wife was actually a man. She was deep on that. So, you know, you get a lot. With Candace, you get a lot, right? You're not just like Ben Shapiro, you're getting boring. What is the Senate doing today? You know, Candace is really expanding the aperture. And so she'll do fine. She was canceled over there. And I do, I get it. People are like, well, that's not really free speech. And it's like, the problem is their own standard. By the Ben Shapiro standard, free speech is ability to speak on whatever platform and whatever place you want, right? Like Ben Shapiro's free speech standard is not government limiting speech, right? His standard is I should be able to go to Berkeley and if the students don't want me to come, I should be able to go there and get paid by Berkeley to go there and speak. And if they are trying to protest that, they're anti-free speech. That's the Ben Shapiro standard. His standard is if a private company, Twitter, decides that they do not want to have white nationalism or they don't want to have, you know, COVID misinformation on their platform, and they kick people off because of that. That is a violation of free speech, right? That every human has a right to be on every private company's platform and speak falsehoods, speak hate speech, and that should not be infringed upon. And that is fundamental. And so using his own standard, I do believe he's violated free speech. He's not actually violated free speech, obviously. Somebody should be able to fire people if they repeatedly do anti-Semitic stuff. Like that should be a fireable offense.
How repeatedly?
A private company. You know, every other week or so. Okay. Every other week or so. You know, it was like, you know, she had a lot of warnings. A lot of warnings. You know, she was like, she was bringing in a lot of money. And so, you know, the Daily Wire guys are like looking at the ledger. They're like, ooh, you know, we got an extra 100,000 this month. Is that worth a few anti-Semitic tweets? Is that, maybe. And finally, eventually they're like, no, okay, we're making enough money as it is. So, they now have a very great lineup of just transphobes and conspiracists and MAGA apologists, anti-gay. So it's a straight lineup there. No more anti-Semites. They're just bigoted against people that it's approved to be bigoted against. So that's
cool.
Good.
Will, where are you on free speech? Are you pro? Because I'm anti. I'm an anti-free speech guy.
I have a nerdy question about free speech, but then I also wanted to say something else. The nerdy question is sort of following up on what Tim said, because I don't know the details here. Like Berkeley is a public university, right? So like that, I don't know if Shapiro actually is against private companies being able to exercise their own cancellations.
I do believe so. I was using example. I think that Ben created fake outrage about him being protested against at many universities, private,
okay,
public, religious, non-religious.
Anybody being mean to me is that's a cancel culture. So the point that I wanted to make about Candace is, and I don't know her. All I know about Candace, I've learned from reading Tim Miller. So I've very, you know, I've that
You're
much.
You're briefed then.
Okay. But I wanted to bring up another name here as a trajectory and ask about her. The name is Tucker Carlson. Now, I'm just a center-left guy, and I watch this crazy stuff like on the right. And I watched Tucker Carlson on Fox News, and I thought, that's pretty nuts. It's pretty out there, all the you know, Zelensky in a tracksuit, crazy stuff. But he's on Fox. You fire Tucker Carlson from Fox. He goes to Twitter, and now he doesn't have whatever institutional constraints there were at Fox, and he's crazier still. So my question about Candace is, was the anti-Semitism and other nonsense that we got from her as part of the Daily Wire, was that actually a constrained version of her? And now that she's free of it, is she going to be even more nuts?
Yeah, I mean, she was very modestly constrained. So I would say that I don't know how much more nuts she can really get. I mean, she was dabbling in pretty much the whole deal. I mean, she went full Vivek on it's okay to ask questions about 9/11. And, you know, again, she was not fired for this. In the same week that she was fired for the anti-Semitic likes and comments on her podcast, she had multiple shows dedicated to Brigitte Macron being a man. Multiple shows. It wasn't like, that wasn't just like a side comment. You know, it's like, oh, we were talking about NATO, you know, we were talking about French policy. And then she's like, I don't really like how much Macron has sided with Zelensky, by the way, his wife, I'm pretty sure, is actually a secret man. I think that the weapons that she's given, it wasn't like that. It was like, no, today's episode is about how Brigitte Macron is actually a man. And then on like Thursday, it's like today's episode is about the backlash against Monday's episode where I said Brigitte Macron was actually a man. So that didn't, she wasn't constrained from doing that. So I don't know how much crazier she could actually get. An interesting subplot of this, I don't know if you guys caught this. I love being able to report from what's really happening out there in the MAGA media big infighting. After she was fired, because I forget exactly how the run of show went, but Candace, you know, kind of claimed that she was fired because she was saying Christ is king, and there were some Jews who were mad
the
about
Nazarene.
That, you know, because they were saying that if Christ is king, that is a anti-Semitic dog. She was doing way more anti-Semitic stuff like this, but when she was doing a victim thing, she was like, that's what they're really mad about because they think, and then I guess Clavin, one of the other Daily Wire people, went on and said, actually, kind of depending on the context that you say Christ is king in, Christ is king could be really anti-Semitic. And then the Nick Fuentes guys, the Groypers jumped on that and came to Candace's defense and was like, no, saying Christ is king is good and everybody in MAGA world should say Christ is king. And if you don't say Christ is king, you're not a part of a true faith. And so there's been like a very
intense... Is he the king of the Jews? Say he is.
Yeah, exactly. So there's been a very intense food fight going on in that world. And if you just want to kind of go down a rabbit hole and just do like 3 hours of whether Christ is king is anti-Semitic or not, there's a lot of content out there for you on that this week.
It's amazing. You know, these things aren't all related, and yet in my mind, they're totally linked, is that Donald Trump is finally hawking Bibles. They're not Trump Bibles.
That's
they're not
it.
Trump Bibles, which is a little weird. They're Lee Greenwood, God Bless the USA Bibles. I think Trump Bibles
I did
Bibles
not know Lee Greenwood
sell-
was alive until this week. I do have to say, that was a fun fact for me this week. Lee Greenwood is with us. I thought he was...
Is he?
He's alive. There are pictures of Trump with Greenwood selling the Bible.
I'm so glad to hear that.
Surprising fact.
Honestly, I think Trump could have moved more units if they had just been the Trump Bible, but that's okay. Maybe that'll be the super double rare bonus collection that they'll do. I care about religion, I think, more than you guys do, like religion and its place in American society. And I have watched the Catholic Church's encounter with the Trump years and been really, really discouraged by it because the Catholics are basically facing the same test that was put to the evangelicals at the beginning of the 1980s. And I just assumed that my people, the papists, would pass this test with flying colors. They have not. It's been not great. And the the real problem with it is people, especially priests, not all priests, but many priests, many of the younger priests, come in and just decide that the American politics is way more important than theology or anything else. Like, the politics is the driver of everything. And then all the Catholic stuff gets sublimated to it. So it's American Catholicism more than it's, you know, the Roman Catholic Church in America. And so stuff like this Bible, which is like putting the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence and the Gettysburg Address, all of which very fine things, you know, in with the Bible, it just seems to me like the wrong, you know, you render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, and then unto to the Lord what is the Lord's. I don't know. Am I being
Hold on, is Trump Caesar or is Trump the Lord?
Both.
That's okay.
That's why you have to render everything unto Trump.
That's an obsolete distinction. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Will, why don't you take this one?
First of all, does this Bible, it has the American founding documents mixed in with the scripture, right? But does it have the text of the national anthem in it, the Star Spangled Banner?
I believe so. I believe it has the text of the Lee Greenwood song in it.
The Greenwood song is in there. So, because I was going to say, in honor of Francis Scott Key, whose bridge
the alternate was, national anthem, the alternate right. alternate. There's two alternate national anthems now: the Lee Greenwood song and the prison choir.
And I think it's a doubly tragic that it was the Francis Scott Key bridge that went down, because he was, after all, the lyricist for the J6 choir, which, of course, is a heavenly body.
It's true. You'd think they'd want to honor him.
Right. I want to pick up, though, JBL, on what you said about religion. So people like me, who were not Republicans, are, you know, think Trumpism is crazy and Trump is nuts and everything, but it's not personal to us the way that it is for the Never Trumpers. For the Never Trumpers, it was like, no, this was our party that got desecrated and destroyed, right? It's much more personal. I think that Trump's abuse of Christianity is very similar for genuine Christians. Like, to me, I'm looking at the outside and I'm like, well, this is gross, but there's been a lot of gross stuff going on in Christianity over the centuries. And there are a lot of people more secular than me and more anti-Christian who are like, you know, it's Christo-fascism, it's, you know, Christian nationalism. But if you're actually a sincere Christian, this is way more personal, because this is your faith, right, that's being hijacked and destroyed and debased by this guy and everybody who goes with him. And so, I mean, Tim, you were joking about, you know, Trump is king, but that sure looks like a lot of people who used to worship Jesus now worship the opposite of Jesus. And for people who genuinely follow Jesus, and I would count myself as somebody who, I'm not Christian, but I think Jesus is a beautiful moral model for everyone. And it is gross to watch people who said they believe in that follow someone who is literally the antithesis of it.
Yeah, here's kind of a problem with that analysis, Will. And the analysis might be right, but I think the darkest part of that analysis, if you think about it. So the Never Trumpers in this parallel, right, the people who were most offended and turned on Trump within the Republican Party were what, 4%? Maybe you might be able to call us 8, but the people who are actually offended, you know, there's maybe another couple percent that didn't dig it, but like the people that were mad, like you're saying, that were genuine and mad, we were about 4%. And that was disappointing to me, I have to say, and it was something that left me in a pretty bad place for a little while, to see that there were so few of me. But it's just a political party. Right. Like, at the end of the day, it's just a political party, whatever. People have different views. People have different things. You can have other political parties. Times change. The Whigs come and go. You know, religion is a different animal. And it seems to me that the ratio is about the same. And that's kind of the problem. Right. Like, it is not as if there is a massive, I mean, maybe it's more than 4%. Right. But it's not as if that there's a massive Christianity backlash to the Trump desecration of the Bible and their faith. I mean, there's some backlash. Like, there's some. Like, there
just is a little bit. More in Catholic world than in Protestant world.
Sure. Yeah.
More in Catholic. This is why I was going to correct Will. I am not a Christian. I'm Catholic.
Same.
This is a Catholic joke. I'm Tim gets and Will does not.
I do get that. I get that. And we also don't know what's in the Bible as Catholics. So it's hard for me to like.
We just let the priest talk at us in Latin. We don't need to understand what's on the page.
But Hebrew is much more intelligible, let me tell you.
I see some of this, like you do, JVL, like through my Catholic family. And so, we're not maybe a representative sample, but I just kind of look at everybody. We got a big Catholic family. Just look at all of it. And like, yeah, sure. There's a percentage that has said, no, this is gross. I'm going to, you know, look for something that feels a little bit more authentic. And there's a percentage that's like not political, that's still just doing their Sunday church thing and not really thinking about this. But like, that's a pretty significant number that's like, no, not only am I not offended about this, but I'm like, hell yeah. Hell's yeah. So,
totally.
Give it
totally.
To me but, more.
But we have, the Catholics have one big thing in their favor in terms of resisting the MAGA stuff, which the MAGAs haven't really, especially the evangelical MAGAs, they haven't quite realized yet. Catholics really love the indigent, right? This is there's a huge thing in like Catholic social justice tradition and theory about, you know, feeding the hungry and clothing the naked and welcoming the homeless and the migrant.
The value of every life, the elderly, like having,
Not, you know, like the Catholics are never going to say, well, you know what? You got to go shopping to prop up Donald Trump's economy, even if it means dying. Most Catholics aren't going to say that. But so we saw a little bit of, there was a piece out yesterday, I guess, about Catholic charities starting to receive death threats and abuse and vandalism because of the work they do trying to care for migrants. And when MAGA starts cottoning on to the fact that, Catholics like brown people who come to America. I think that might queer them on us. So fingers crossed, guys.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed that they break up with the Catholics before the Catholics go in with them.
That is the most hopeful thing anyone has said to me. I mean, I'm sorry, it's awful, but like, but the idea that Catholics could be, I had not until this moment thought that in this election, Catholics could be a pivotal group, but now I'm thinking about it.
I am hopeful for that, but not optimistic. I will just say one more thing on the Trump video. With the religion, and there's been several examples of this, but like if we were in the year 2005 and had Saturday Night Live done a skit where it was like, hey, George, here's the George W. Bush Bible, and they did a skit that was just the Trump video with Lee Greenwood, but it's not Trump, it's George Bush, and they're selling a $60 Bible, like the response on Fox and among the National Review and among candidates would have just been apoplectic. You liberals don't understand us. You don't get it. This is sacrilegious. This is liberal brain poisoning. This is just Hollywood doesn't realize that there are people out here in real America who have genuine beliefs and love our country and love the Bible, and we would never do anything like this, and this is a fucking disgusting spoof. That would have been an entire Fox and Friends segment, and Trump now does the exact thing that the liberals would have spoofed. And people are like, yeah, cool. Yeah, give him $60, you said? 60?
It is the,
maybe I can give you a little tip.
It's the law of merited impossibility, right? They say this thing that you're talking about couldn't possibly happen, and you're a bigot for saying it, and then it happens, and they say, you're damn right, it's about time. that's how it is.
Love me, love my idolatry, yeah.
All right, guys, good show, long show. Next week, Sarah will be here, but I won't. Cut that out, Sebastian. Don't tell them I'm such a draw. They'll
huge,
you know, they just numbers. Won't, the numbers will be way down next week. All right, guys, have a good week. We'll see you next time.
Peace.